Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to a Need to Know podcast. This is episode 262, and my name is Robert Crane. Thank you very much for joining me as we close in on the end of 2020. So I'll take this opportunity to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and all the best over the festive seasons, and looking forward to the new year and hopefully the more positives that 2021 will bring us. Now, remember, if you do want to contact me, you can do so on the Twitters at DirectorCIA. You can check me out via email, director@ciaops.com. And of course, the best place to keep up with all the information, even over the Christmas break, is going to be blog.ciaops.com. Now, a lot's been happening, especially in the security space in the last week or so. The major one around this is the SolarWinds attack. This has morphed into quite an extensive attack against various government entities, private entities as well. It has encompassed people like Microsoft as well. Now, I will take this opportunity just to clarify some incorrect information that is out there. Basically, the statement from Microsoft about the use of SolarWinds has been put forward in a blog post, which I'll link to so you can have a look, but I will read this out. And the statement says, like other SolarWinds customers, we have been actively looking for indicators of this actor and confirm that we detected malicious SolarWinds binaries in our environment, which we isolated and removed. We have not found evidence of access to production services or customer data. Our investigations, which are ongoing, have found absolutely no indications that our systems were used to attack others. So again, just important to clarify exactly the right information that is out there. This sort of situation tends to generate quite prevalent clickbait, so please make sure that you do have all the correct information. I'll put a link to all these articles that I'm about to mention in there, so you can go and read all of that in more detail. Now, to kick off here, Microsoft does have a great article, a statement from them, probably the high level here about the need for a stronger response to global security, because again, this looks as though these attacks have happened because of a nation state actor targeting people in the US and also targeting government agencies over there. This is, I suppose, interesting that it is getting to a point now where it is becoming, at a nation state level, and it's impacting businesses, and it's going to have very interesting implications when it comes to international relations. New sort of warfare, we've seen it on the rise with things like, Stuxnet and whatnot, but certainly I would recommend that you have a look at this article from Microsoft, basically from Brad Smith, talking about the need for us to really get serious about these high-level attacks that are very, very much indicate that they are nation states, but they have a lot of implications right down to small SMBs as well, because they can be affected just as readily by these sort of attacks. So again, take a moment and have a look at that information. Certainly, again, recommend that you do take the time to read that extensive article from Microsoft. Now, if you want to actually dive into the guts and understand what this was all about and how the attack was actually perpetrated, and again, another fantastic article from Microsoft here, analyzing SolarGate, the compromised DLL file that started a sophisticated cyber attack, and how Microsoft Defender helps protect customers. So a really in-depth breakdown of how this all came about, what the factors were, the reconnaissance, the backdoor. Again, it's not so much, again, about the Microsoft products, although they are mentioned, obviously, but again, some very, very good detail and in-depth information actually about the attack and how it was perpetrated and what lengths it went to get inside systems. And again, worthwhile having a look if you're really into analyzing the technical components of this sort of cyber attack. Now, Microsoft also has a number of resources available for people. So, for example, one of the best tools is Azure Sentinel. This is going to allow you to look across your environment and look for signals and signs and properties of this attack in the environment. So Microsoft has created a number of different queries and actions that you can take. And once again, I'll put a link to that article in there that has been updated a number of times since it was initially released. And that will basically help you do some hunting with Azure Sentinel. And if you're not using Azure Sentinel, this is, again, such a good indication that you should be using it to allow you to look across all the signals across all your environment and get that information quickly in a single console. Now, there is also information here from Microsoft about ensuring customers are protected from this sort of attack. So it talks about the defender side of it, how that is now looking and taking active action against the files that are part of this attack. Again, there's a good article. The article here goes into depth of how you can do it with a GPO, how you can do it with the MDM, how you can do it with Endpoint Manager, how you can do it on standalone machines, how to remediate it, and so on. So I'd again encourage you to go in and have a look at that. Defender does a fantastic job, always has, and I would suggest that you have a look at this and look at the actions it has for different environments, even if you are on-prem. Obviously, the cloud is going to give you that better, more in-depth protection. Its ability to analyze signals, again, is going to be superior, but this article here about ensuring customers are protected from SolarGate is going to be that something that you can take action on in your environment today to help protect you and your environment. Now, also on the security news is the fact that Defender for Office 365, so this is the old Office 365 ATP, is having improved investigations, and they'll be rolling out soon. So we're going to be able to get a hell of a lot more information about, you know, the phishing emails and, you know, those sort of things that are sent to users. We're going to analyze them. We're going to be able to get much more detail on that and take action. Now, what I like about this is, again, the indication of the seriousness that Microsoft is investing in the security space, especially around the most common vector, typically being email delivery. So again, if you are using Defender for Office 365, if you have something like Microsoft 365 Business Premium, you will have the ability, again, to have all of these advanced features. So you're going to have, you know, more power in your action center, the ability to have improved alerts, and also do advanced hunting, correlate incidents. There's a whole range of features that are rolling out. And again, I'll make sure that article is in the show notes so you can go in and have a look at that and see what's coming and the benefits that will provide. And hopefully that won't be too far away before we see it in all of our tenants. Now, again, some more security here about some quick wins that you can take when you secure Azure AD and Office 365. So in this environment today where we are very focused on security, it's very important to make sure that you are, you know, checking and testing and configuring things correctly and reviewing that on a regular basis, because things change so dramatically so quickly and can, you know, arise as we've seen in recent history. So one of the key metrics here is going to be secure score. So this article here will give you more details around secure score, what things like security defaults are, again, how you can set this up, how you can configure these to maximize that for your own security. So again, a couple little options there, but you really should be doing, again, things like secure score, security defaults, MFA. They're going to give you your basics and generally protect your environment. So go in and have a look at that article there. Make sure that you're up to speed with all of those options. Now, on to the more productivity side of things. There's a good article here from Microsoft on the ways that is improving the experience for Mac users. So Microsoft has announced that its universal app support for the M1 processor is now available. Microsoft experiences on the Mac have also been improved and optimized for that environment. So remember that One of the things you get with something like Microsoft 365 Business Premium is going to be a version of Office for Mac that you can install on your iOS Mac devices, and you're going to get that with all the benefits and the customizations that come with the Mac environment. So some good news there for Mac users. You haven't been forgotten. Microsoft is still investing quite a significant amount of resources to make sure that it takes advantage of all the facilities that are available in that platform. So go away, have a look at that article, and again, make sure you have all of that turned on. Now, one of the things is that I liked that is coming is an update to Microsoft Edge. Now, it's currently in the beta channel, so it's in beta 88 of Edge. It's sleeping tabs. So one of the challenges with most browsers is the fact they consume a lot of memory because a lot of people like to open lots and lots of tabs and have them open at the same time, and that again generally chews up a lot of the memory, because to render the pages and present them does take a fair amount of resources. So what we're seeing being delivered now is the fact that Microsoft Edge will also look at putting those tabs to sleep to reduce the amount of memory and CPU usage. Now, as mentioned, it's in the beta channel, but hopefully it won't take long before it rolls out into the production, the normal Edge that everybody sees, to give us some memory back and improve our performance when we're using the Edge browser. Now, an interesting one here is that guest access in Yammer using Azure B2B is now in preview. I was a very high user of this feature before Microsoft did change the way that it allowed people to interact with Yammer inside Microsoft 365. It basically sort of locked that off to just the users in the tenant. Well, now it's opening this up again to Azure B2B users. So it means you're going to be able to have external users who you typically see using things like Teams as well from other tenants, or authenticating with Google or Facebook or whatever, being able to be added in and work with the environment you have in Yammer. So again, looking forward to that. I've got plenty of ideas around that and what can potentially be provided. So make sure that you listen along, and I'll give you any details of what I've got in mind for that once I've confirmed that is all up and working in the tenant. But again, in preview now, go in and have a look at the article, and if you want to configure and set that up for your environment. Big proponent of using Yammer, simply because it's around conversations. Teams, we find, is beginning to become quite large and can be very distracting and somewhat intimidating for users, and Yammer's, I think, a good way to keep things very simple, especially initially when it starts out, when people are just getting into this new modern environment that they may not have experienced before. Now, one of the other changes that Microsoft announced was around its certification. So there's a blog post here, again, that I'll link to in the show notes. You can go and have a look at. But as we all know, certifications are something that, you know, Microsoft does provide, and it has been updating its certifications regularly given the changes in technology. Well, this new announcement here basically indicates that most of the certifications after June 2021 will only be valid for 12 months. So this just indicates the speed at which cloud technology is moving. Now, the good thing is that once you do that initial exam, which you'll have to do in an exam center as per normal, you'll be able to take a renewal exam or course online. And when you pass that, that will extend your certification for another year. So basically, it's sort of back to the way it was with a 2 year for the certification, but you will have to do a bit of a top up or a bit of a refresher in the middle, but that will be online and will be delivered via LinkedIn Learning. So again, I think this is a good move because things are moving so quickly. It's hard to, you know, provide people who are certified in the latest and the greatest because it is changing so rapidly. Now, as always, I do recommend people look at doing certifications regularly, something that I'm, again, in a practice of doing, because it makes you much more aware of the total feature range that Microsoft provides in its products, keeps you current, and also gives you a demonstrable skill to show to customers and other people that you are keeping current with the technology. So again, go and have a read of this new approach to certifications, what they're doing there, and I'd strongly recommend that you look at getting in and doing these regular certifications. The 900 exams are a great place to start. There are those in Azure, there are those in Microsoft, and also AI and so on. So the 900s are nice introductory fundamentals starting point. Certainly encourage people to go in and do those and keep doing them regularly. Now, the last little item here is one that I found that I haven't seen much publicity for. It's called Clarity. So you'll find it at clarity.microsoft.com. And basically it allows you to add some code to your website and replay user sessions and look at things like heat maps and usage. So the idea is people come and use your website, you can get an idea of how they use it, where they clicked, and that might help you improve the navigation or see what people how they're using the website and make the adjustments as required. Now, the great thing about Clarity is that it's free. So again, go and have a look at it. Put it on your website. I think it's a good resource to have for your websites on top of your normal analytics. And it being free is certainly something that's worth exploring. So again, that's at clarity.microsoft.com. So again, I will take this opportunity to thank you very much for listening to this episode. Wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Remember that you can contact me on the Twitters at DirectorCIA, also via email, director@CIAOps.com. All the notes and the links that I've mentioned here will be at blog.CIAOps.com when this episode is released. And the final thing that you can do for me is to obviously like and share this podcast, share the information around to others who you think may get benefit from the information that is shared. And so with that, why don't we get into the interview for this episode? Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. For this episode, I'm joined by Daniel Crolland. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. All right. Well, as we always do for our initial participants here, can you just give us a bit of a background on yourself, Daniel, what you do, where you've come from, you know, your journey through technology for all the listeners, please?
Yeah, sure. So I've been working with Microsoft Technologies for basically all my career, and I've been putting a lot of energy into the Microsoft Cloud for the last maybe 5 years or so. So today I only do Microsoft 365, and I have a focus on security and compliance. That's what I basically do. And I work for a small company in Sweden called Altitude 365. And this is what we do, and maybe you can hear it on the name as well. So very, very much Microsoft 365 focused.
Excellent. All right. Well, these people who name their companies 365 are probably going to have a problem when Microsoft renames the product. But let's keep our fingers crossed that that doesn't help happen for quite a while. Because although Microsoft is known for renaming its product, so at this stage, 365 is the go. So I've asked Daniel to come along and obviously to do a bit of a focus on what I see as being, you know, a real key technology. It's now been enabled for us with Microsoft 365 Business Premium. I think it's one of the key features that everybody needs to enable. And I thought it was a good opportunity to learn some more about it from a real expert in the field. So I think, Daniel, before we start, you know, sort of talking about you know, a major topic here, and given your security focus and obviously the times that we now live in, you know, why is this sort of security focus now so important? Is it really that different from it was 12 months, 2 years, you know, 5 years ago? Is security that much more important than it used to be?
Well, so security, of course, has always been very important. But as you are well aware of, the world is rapidly changing. There's a lot of things happening due to the current situation, among other things. And the new norm is that we live in a remote everything world. So data travels and it lives everywhere. Basically, you have it with you on your mobile devices. It lives in the cloud. You have it on your PC. So the big question here around security is, how do we protect this data when it basically lives everywhere? So that's the challenge that we have. And If you live in a Microsoft environment, if you do Microsoft security, then you know, you're probably aware of that Microsoft is talking a lot about what is called Zero Trust. And Zero Trust is basically a modern security model. We don't think that much of secure networks and insecure networks and, you know, the traditional way of doing security. Instead, we assume that all networks are unsafe and we treat them basically as the internet. So we never trust, we always verify. That's the ground principle of Zero Trust. And this is how we need to do it when data travels and lives everywhere. We need to verify always that the user that connects, that the device that connects, that everything is secure, that everything is everyone is who they say they are, basically. So we do something that we call verify explicitly. We look at different security signals to make sure that this is right, this is okay. Security signals can include things like the identity, of course, username, passwords, and MFA, of course. We can look at things as location, device health, the current service or app that we are trying to reach, data classification, the risk level. There are a lot of things that we need to take into consideration when we do it in a Zero Trust model. So that's one thing. And then we can also, we need to try to limit what users can actually access. And we do this by using least privileged access. This is also a way of doing security where we work with things like just-in-time and just-enough access to make sure that users can actually only reach what they are supposed to and when they are supposed to. And finally, an important part of Zero Trust is that we're always assuming breach. And Microsoft was really an early adopter of this term. And they've been doing this for many years, and they built it into their products. And by assuming breach, I really mean that we should assume that the attacker is already on the inside. And if we know that the attacker is on the inside, what can we do to prevent them from causing more damage? How can we limit them so they cannot do what it's called lateral movement, for example, where they jump from system to system or service to service or trying to elevate their permissions and so on? How can we limit that? And there are different approaches and strategies for this, like segmenting access by network. Here as well, we can look at the user and limit what the user can do, devices, the application. There are a lot of things that we can do if we go in with the thought of we are already breached.
Yeah. Right, so one of the things that you sent me, which I think I find very interesting, is that you've mentioned here that conditional access, which is what we're going to focus on here a lot, you've got this here as a zero trust engine in Microsoft 365. Do you want to sort of, you know, expand that a bit? I'm a little bit confused how you see that as being a zero trust engine in Microsoft 365.
Yeah. So Microsoft said back at Ignite this year that Zero Trust is, conditional access is the Zero Trust engine for Microsoft 365. And the way this works is that Zero Trust is a policy engine, and you take in your security signals. You remember that I said that you need to take a lot of security signals into consideration when we do a Zero Trust model. So conditional access is that we bring in all the security signals, we build our policies, and based on different conditions, we can actually decide who gets access to what and under what circumstances. What are the requirements to basically let the user in to this service? So it sits in the middle, and it really works like this, that we take in the different security signals, like the device platform, for example, device health, device risk level, client app, sign-in risk, a lot of things that we can look at. And then we apply different requirements based on that. And a requirement can be that the user need to verify themselves with MFA, or they need to connect from a managed device. They need to use an approved client app, for example. And by that, I mean an application that Microsoft has flagged as this supports the different security features that we require. for the Microsoft 365 way of doing security. We can apply other things like terms of use, like acceptable use policies and things like that. So that's basically how it works. We take in the security signals, we look at them, and then we decide what to do with it. And this is very important in the zero trust model, because you need that engine to look at everything. And conditional access is expandable. This is not just for, you know, the Office 365 applications. You can actually expand it to other cloud services as well, and you can expand it to your on-premise services also by using application proxy connectors and so on. So it's built to be the center of this whole zero trust model, and that's why Microsoft calls it the zero trust engine.
Okay, well, I hadn't necessarily seen that, but it makes a lot of sense when you talk about it. The policy driven side of it, yeah, I get that and the connection to it. So since we've sort of let the cat out of the bag a bit around the focus on conditional access, why don't you give the listeners a bit of an idea around the basics for those who might not be familiar about what conditional access actually is and what role it plays, and again, why it's so important going forward.
Yeah, sure. So conditional access is a way of doing security, of course, and it's also a way of improving the user experience. You can actually do that if you implement this the correct way by looking at other things when you verify the user, when you verify the device. So you don't need to harass the user every time with MFA, because we know that this time when they sign in, they are on a trusted device that we know it's encrypted. We know they have all the security updates and so on. We can actually create a better user experience as well. But conditional access is, as I mentioned, built around policies. And you create multiple policies to meet your security goals. That's how you most often do it. And a policy includes things like what users or groups does it apply to, which applications, and of course, which conditions are we looking at to match this policy? When will it actually trigger? And then finally, the requirements. What do we require from the user or from the device if this policy matches? So that's how we're doing it. We're going to use multiple policies to reach our security goals. And there are also something that we call block policies, which also plays an important role in this, because you can use the block policies to actually block scenarios that you don't want, that you're not allowing in your organization. Might be anything from we're not allowing this device platform to we won't let any high risk users into our systems. So that's how it works. And an important note here is conditional access is always evaluated after the user has actually been authenticated. So if you ever sign into, you know, Office 365 or any Azure AD application, you know, you first get prompted for username and password, and that's fine. But conditional access are actually applied after you input your username and password. And this is something that many people miss, and it's important when you're troubleshooting and when you're trying to figure out what's actually wrong here. Is it conditional access? Is it anything else? Conditional access often takes the blame for things that weren't really conditional access fault.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot too. I agree with you that a lot of people interpret a conditional access as a way to overcome password spray attacks or to prevent, you know, denial of service or those sort of things. So it's important to know in the sequence of, you know, login, authentication, whatever you want to call it, that again, it is evaluated after, as you mentioned, after the login there to, again, provide that layer, additional layer of protection. Now, in your travels in over time, obviously you're doing this within the business that you work with, but what do you see generally out there in the market in your travels? Do you see this conditional access is something that people are using, they're adopting, especially, you know, in the SMB? Is it, you know, something that only the enterprise folks get? Is it something that the SMB demographic is missing, do you think? What are you seeing out there in the environment? Is it really something people are taking advantage of?
It's getting better, But what I see often is that people are trying to implement it, but they don't really understand how it works. And basically, they leave a lot of holes. There are ways to get around conditional access. One example is that they haven't blocked legacy authentication, for example. And that means that you can bypass things like MFA because you're using a more traditional basic authentication, which is very unsecure. So the first thing you should do is to block legacy authentication and make sure that everyone needs to go through this policy design and get evaluated through our zero trust model. So I see people implement it, but it's not, most organizations aren't really there yet, unfortunately. One other thing that people don't understand are how multiple policies work. What happens when a policy match? What happens when multiple policies match? And people think of conditional access like a traditional firewall, you know, where you have access rules and the firewall go through them from the top to bottom. And when a policy matches, it stops and it allows or it blocks based on that particular policy or access rule. But conditional access doesn't work like that. It actually goes through each and every policy every time, and every policy that matches are applied. That means this is an advantage for us because we can actually use multiple policies to reach our goal. We can have multiple policies working together. One example of that is you can have one policy that brings up the terms of use, like an acceptable use policy for the user, but you can have another policy that requires MFA. And if both of those are matching at the same time, you will get those both requirements applied at the same time as well. This is something that people miss and they don't understand why doesn't it work? Why does it behave like this? I think that's important to understand as well. So people are getting there, but there are a lot of misconceptions on how conditional access work, I believe.
All right, so speaking of multiple policies, in your opinion, is it a better practice, for example, to split those up and, you know, have a, say, a conditional access based on location and a conditional access policy based on, you know, terms of use or whatever? Or should you look at having one larger policy with everything that you need? Is that an easier approach? What's your sort of rule of thumb or recommendation you would have for people? Do we lump everything together in one policy, or would we break it out into individual items which may allow us to troubleshoot it easier?
Yeah, so I guess that depends. But when I build the policy designs, it often ends up around the plus 10 policies for any given organization, because that's what's needed. I'm not a big fan of using the location in my policies, because as we talked about, zero trust really assumes that all networks are unsafe. There are still, of course, use cases for the location signal, but I'm not a big fan of it. But anyway, you need multiple policies. I often build policies around the different platforms because I might want different requirements for different platforms. One example is that we need a way to know if a device is managed or not. And depending on the platform, we might do this in different ways. Like a Windows device, we can look, is this AD joined? Okay, then we know it's managed. But we can also use things like Intune compliance. Is this managed by Intune, and does it comply with our security standards, which can also be applied to Windows, but that's also the only way that we can know if a Mac device is managed, for example, because we can't join that to the RAD. So we need different policies for different platforms. We need other policies to manage our guest users, for example. One recommendation for me is to use policies to make sure that guests are required to use MFA, because even though that they bring their own account into your tenant, it's your information. You need to protect your information. And the way you can do that is to enforce MFA on the guest users. That's another example. So you are probably going to need around at least 10 policies to fill in all the gaps, so to say.
All right, so if we've got a lot of policies there, and
again, over time, like anything, you know, it does become a bit fuzzy. We tend to forget things, and why was this set up, and why do we do this? And if we need to go back and revisit them, or we need to do a bit of basic troubleshooting or evaluation, what's the best way for us to, you know, evaluate how the policies, you know, actually implement, you know, beforehand, so we can get an idea of, you know, what is going to, you know, be affected when a certain user logs in under certain conditions?
Yeah. So a year ago at Ignite last year, Microsoft announced a new feature that they call report only mode. And this is something that you can enable for one or multiple conditional access policies. And in report only mode, the policies are being evaluated, but not enforced. The requirements are never enforced. So this means that we can actually create our policies, and we can enable them in report-only mode to collect data. How would this apply if this were live? What would happen? What if, basically? And then we can use, we can look at the result in the sign-ins log. Of course, we have a new tab in there where we can see the evaluated report-only policies. But we can also use a new feature called Conditional Access Insights Dashboard. And this is a log analytics workbook. It's free, but you need to export your sign-in logs to log analytics, and you need to pay for the storage there. But it shouldn't be super expensive if you're not a huge organization. But once you do that, you can actually go in and look at the Conditional Access Insights dashboard. And with this dashboard, we can basically predict the future. We can go in and see what would happen if our report-only policies were live. We get statistics on how many would have been blocked from this platform using this application. How many users would have gone in with a high risk and would get blocked because of that, and so on. So that's my big recommendation, is to look into the Conditional Access Insights dashboard. That's a great tool.
I think that's something that a lot of people do overlook. It's obviously in a little bit of a different area, I suppose, and it's not quite as obvious as it could be, but certainly a great and handy tool to do it. And the costs, again, are relatively minor for you know, most people, as you sort of mentioned there. So obviously we've got components around MFA, we've got components around conditional access, and, you know, throughout the Microsoft stack, there's a huge range of additional security features. And one of the big benefits of that is this integration, is this ability for them to share signals between them. Can you give us a bit of an idea of, you know, where else is conditional access going to be able to be integrated in the Microsoft environment, sharing signals? And, you know, again, what's a benefit, another benefit of using the Microsoft tools in total, the services in total, to obviously, you know, add on to what we get with conditional access?
Yeah, sure. And I believe that this is the great strength of Microsoft 365, where we have all these integrations that work together to create a great security posture. And conditional access is no exception. We already mentioned a couple of them. We have like the user risk or the sign-in risk, and that's actually Azure AD Identity Protection that's working in the background, that looks at user how user anomalies, basically. We can see, are the user signing in from a new location? Are they doing impossible travels, moving from point A to B in a short amount of time? Are they trying to anonymize their IP address and things like that? So that's identity protection together with conditional access. We also mentioned Intune, so we can look at the Intune compliance, and that's very powerful because as you probably are well aware of, you know that in Intune you can look at things like, are my device encrypted? Does it have all the latest updates? Is it protected by an antivirus, and so on? But we have additional ones as well. One important part is the device risk level. And that information is actually coming from Defender for Endpoint, or previously Defender ATP, where that product can actually look at the device. It can detect, oh, we have malware here, or we have suspicious behavior on this device. And it can flag it as medium risk or high risk or anything. And that information gets synced over to the conditional access engine. And in that engine, we can decide that, oh, if this device is high risk, we won't let it in. We're going to block it. So that's very important when it comes to device risk and looking at the device threat level. And finally, we also have a great integration with cloud app security. And this means that we can actually look at what's happening after we have signed in, because what we have said about conditional access now is that it happens right after username and password, and then it's over. But that's not really true. We can also combine it with cloud app security, and that makes it possible for us to control what happens during the session. We can do things like block confidential information from leaving our organization, or we can allow it to leave, but we're going to encrypt it before it leaves to Dropbox or to Salesforce or anything like that. So it's also a great tool for actually using conditional access as a proxy. Every authentication that goes through conditional access can be proxied over to cloud app security, and we can do all the cool things around policies in cloud app security together with conditional access. That's another great example of the integrations.
So I think one of the benefits, again, that people don't realize is as they move up the Microsoft stack, so we're moving from, say, Business Standard to Business Premium, they are going to get many of these combinational features. So they're going to get, you know, conditional access as part of Azure AD P1. They're going to get Cloud App Discovery, you know, an entry-level style monitoring, as you mentioned. And as we move up the stack, we're getting so many of these features in these, you know, as part of these licenses that a lot of people probably aren't aware of and aren't taking full advantage of, that could really make their environments, I think, a lot more secure. Now, with that in mind, is where do you see the problem, or why do you think that's so? Is it just an education thing? Is it just a case of, you know, IT pros generally just doing the basics, or just, you know, moving email to email and files to files and not diving deep into what's available in the SKUs? You know, why are people missing these features, which they're probably in many cases already paying for?
Yeah, not really sure. I believe that people don't realize how important it is to use these tools to combat the modern threats that we see, because when you go up the licensing stack here, as you say, there are a lot of features that uses AI and machine learning and modern tools to look at behaviors, to try to analyze and see anomalies and so on. So they are super important to you know, combat the modern threats that we see out there. But I'm not really sure why people miss it. Maybe it's a lack of understanding. Maybe we need to do more in the IT industry to make people aware of that these tools are in here. Because when we talk about the zero trust model, as we're talking about today, these are very important tools. We need to bring in as many security signals as possible to create our policies and to make sure that we only allow the correct scenarios, basically.
Perhaps part of it lies in the fact that there are now many options, there are many ways to secure environments, and there perhaps is a bit of a confusion around, you know, what does exactly each thing do, you know, what role does it exactly play, and how can it help me reduce my risk, and, you know, where do they sort of, you know, fit together, I think is probably the biggest challenge. And maybe a downside from Microsoft's point of view is they haven't done well. I think they've done really well at talking about the value of each of the items individually, but probably they haven't really focused on that integration. I think they are beginning to do that, but because of the way, you know, they've got their team set up and the people that develop them, there's not that crossover where the, you know, they're working together and saying, look, you know, you'll get this with this tool and this tool, but if you combine them together, you get, you know, 1 + 1 = 3 sort of solution. Gets so much more than you normally do by using just the individual items. So I think maybe that's got something to do with it. But you're right. I think part of it is an education. Hopefully this episode will help people, at least that haven't looked at it, to go in, take a deeper dive and have a bit of a play with the concept of conditional access. Now, I think that probably now is a good time to talk about some of the best tips and best practices you've come across and some troubleshooting tips. Now, I think probably a good place to start is what's your recommendations around making sure that you don't accidentally lock yourself out using conditional access?
Yeah, sure. So it's super important that we have some kind of break glass strategy here. And the recommended way of doing this is to have a couple of break glass accounts that you put into a security group in Azure AD. And then you exclude that security group from all of your conditional access policies without exceptions. They should be, even if the policy only applies to guests, doesn't matter, you need to put it in because it's so easy to misclick. And you can, I often say that conditional access has no mercy. You can actually lock out yourself and you can lock out everyone from the tenant if you do this wrong. So it's super important that you have a break glass strategy here and that you exclude those break glass accounts from your policies. That's number one. Yeah.
So I think that that is, again, it is very easy to do because what I find is when people do conditional access sort of for the first time, they tend to approach it from the opposite way. They tend to take, you know, the backward, you know, not a backward, but an approach where they tend to lock themselves out rather than, you know, what they're trying to achieve. So I think that's a really good piece of advice to make sure that you do have at least one account which is exempt from all the policies that if needed to, you can get back in. And again, just be very careful and do that testing around the what if scenario before you actually go and implement it. So any other general, you know, tips, best practices that you can recommend to listeners based on your experiences?
Yeah, so a deployment tip here is you can, conditional access is very flexible. So you basically, you apply all the policies to groups. So my recommendation is to have some kind of pilot group. Once you've gone through the reporting state and you looked at everything, oh, it looks fine, you should do a pilot also. So you create an AD group, you put in some pilot users, and then you apply it to all your policies. But what you can also do, because many customers that I meet, they've tried to build something on their own, but they want to scrap that, they want to start over. So what we can do is to create our new policy design, and we can keep the old one, but we have this pilot Azure AD group included in all the new ones, and we exclude it from all the old ones. It makes it very easy to migrate users over from the old policy design to the new one, just by adding them to that single group.
Yeah, I think that there are some simple things that can be done, and again, it's always best to test it out, make sure that it works. Like you said, in a limited environment, and that you are obviously have a little bit of experience, a little bit of reading before you go charging into setting up some of these policies, because that's a good way to get into, you know, all sorts of issues there. Now, if you are having troubles with it for some reason, it doesn't seem to be working or it's inconsistent, what's the best place to look? We just go back through the what if scenarios, or, you know, just work backwards and take people out of groups. Is there any sort of other, you know, way that we can maybe troubleshoot this? I mean, is using the Azure logs a good operation to, you know, begin to pull some of that lower level detail out?
Yeah, so the sign-in logs in Azure AD are very informative when it comes to conditional access. You can often see the error message in clear text. It tells you that, oh, the user tried to sign in from a device that wasn't joined to AD, and you have this in your policies. So the sign-in logs are the first place you should go to. Also, the conditional access errors that the user gets are also often very informative. You've probably seen this, you get an error message like, you can't get there from here. And then if you read the fine print under that, it will often tell you what the problem is. So that's also good. Then you have a built-in what if tool in the policy portal, where you can actually simulate policy enforcement. So you can click around and select users, select locations, select apps, different circumstances like sign-in risk and so on. And then you click what if, and then you get a list of the policies that would have been applied if this was live. And of course, the report only tool that we talked about earlier, it can also be used for troubleshooting, of course.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is there are a lot of troubleshooting tools that are available to you. It does require a little bit of, obviously, digging into or having a bit of experience, but obviously those logs, the AD logs are fantastic. And if you want to, you can step up to the next level and look at the log analytics, as you've mentioned. And hopefully, if you want to go even further, you can look at the Kusto query language to start pulling out some of that implementation and information there as well. Now, if we want to look at deploying this, are there any, best practice you'd have about deploying? Do we just turn it on from day one? Or do you recommend we start with a smaller deployment group, beta testers, and is it best to, avoid management putting them in first? What's, in your experience, rolling this out has been, the best pathway to success?
So the first step is the report only mode and looking at the insight dashboards and so on. That's step number one. And then we have the pilot group that I mentioned. That's also a good way to know what will happen when we deploy this broadly. But our goal should be to target the policies to all users, except for the break glass accounts, of course. By using a pilot group and adding different groups to that one, we can actually deploy this in any phase that we like. I think that's the biggest recommendation here. And always follow up, look at the logs, how is this working, follow up with users. Because it doesn't have, a lot of people think of conditional access as super hard, super complex. This is, it's difficult to implement this, but it doesn't have to be that if you do it in a slow phase. You just deploy it in a tempo that suits you and your organization.
Okay, so as we begin to wind up, is there any references that you can share with us? Obviously, if you have any links, send them to me and I'll make sure they get in the show notes. But I know Microsoft's got a lot of good stuff out there, but does anything that you've come across that you'd recommend people go and look at that should help them on their journey to implementing conditional access successfully?
Myself has been working a lot with the Graph API and PowerShell for the last year around conditional access. And I think this is super interesting because you can actually use conditional access as code. You can put it into Azure DevOps or GitHub or anything and treat it as code and version control and so on. So I think that's super interesting. And if you are interested in looking at this, I have some templates and baselines and so on that I'm sharing online that I believe is a good start for any company if they are unsure what should we build, how should we do this. So I think that's good. The Graph API overall is there are a lot of features in there for conditional access. You can manage them, you can monitor them. Why not monitor changes? You can do that with log analytics as well. So there are a lot of things out there to do if you want to step this up a bit around automation and monitoring.
Excellent. All right. Well, again, I'll share any links that Daniel shares with me and we'll make sure they're available to people. Now, to round things off, some final thoughts on conditional access, what we've talked about. For people out there who may be now obviously keen on doing it and looking to make their environment more secure. And if you can also let us know of your contact details so that people can reach out to you if they do have any further questions after this episode.
Yeah. So if you're going to do one security thing in your environment, look into conditional access because it's super important. This is the number one thing that will block the attackers. We see a lot of things in our daily work where we have password spray attacks, as you mentioned, brute force attacks, different kind of identity-based attacks, and conditional access is very effective against those kinds of attacks. Roll it out in any phase that suits you. Use pilot groups, remember the break glass accounts, and also the sign-in logs when you're troubleshooting. It will help you very much.
Excellent. All right. So how do people reach out to you, get in contact, keep an eye on what you're doing and some of that information about the graph and what you've been playing with recently?
Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, of course. It's Daniel Kronlund. That's my name. Chronlund. That's my surname. And also you can find me on my blog. That's also https://DanielChronlund.com.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure that those links are put into the show notes for you if you do wish to follow what Daniel's up to. Certainly highly recommend it. Lots of really good technical information, lots of good scripts in there as well that I think you should subscribe to and take advantage of. So I will, again, take this opportunity to thank Daniel for his time today, sharing all that information, again, in a very different time zone from what I am here. So I appreciate him making time for me to do that. And again, I think there's been a lot of great information that's been shared here, and obviously hopefully makes people more aware of the real benefits and what conditional access can do to improve security. So again, Daniel, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you.
All right then, so we'll take this opportunity once again to thank everybody who's listened to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.